Hello, everybody. We are back in business here over at No Killing Goblins. I'm Dragonus, and this is.
Well, this is Oshi.
And we are here to talk about more wandering in, everyone's favorite subject. Or at least everyone who I assume is listening to this podcast's favorite subject. I know it's probably in my top three.
I'm not jumping in, but I was trying not to cough in your face. It's like I can't stop being sick. I just can't. Guys, it's been a long hiatus for us. You will barely have noticed it because the episodes that are coming out are going to be one after another for you, but after we start back up, but we've been gone for a little while. Last recording was in the summer, and now we're sitting here. It's like October, almost Halloween. Lots of stuff is going on, and the biggest news for the podcast itself has been that we have some new people we brought on who are going to make it a lot easier for us to do some production and, stay consistent instead of not dropping an episode for 8 months, 9 months, 10 months. Well, how many months has been?
A few. It's been about a
It's been
few.
about a few. Yeah, let's just say that. We've got a really cool new editor, and our new producer is, I don't know if we can say her name. Can we say your name? All right. Oh, if there's silence, it's because she refuses to be on camera, on recording. It's Kylara. Ha! Clap, clap, everybody clap.
Yep. Kylara is going to be doing a lot of help, just helping us stay organized and on track. And just having a dedicated editor more than anything else in the world, because Oshi and I hate editing. Both of us, at the moment we start hearing our own voices, start reaching for power drills.
Forget power drills. I just don't want to do it. It's just too much. I got enough in my life. I don't need to be doing it for 3.5 hours. It turns out I'm actually decent at it because I can listen at 2 and 4 times speed and still be able to hear people's voices and pick stuff up. What?
Yeah, that is handy. And yeah, I will admit, it might every now and then it makes my ADHD go haywire because you really can't do anything else while you're doing it. But that's enough of us griping about production stuff. Let's talk positive stuff about production stuff. And yeah, everybody clap for our new members. The
Yay!
team is growing.
I cannot wait to dive back in because for once, all of my like mental energy did not go into just preparing for the episode. I can just talk about stuff for once. Now, I love like our old system worked, but honestly, spending 4 days preparing stuff made me really not want to talk about the stuff that we were supposed to.
I'll admit I didn't catch that feeling, but I have a very different, very sort of loose note-taking preparatory style. So I guess it was just less exhaustive for me. Probably why I talk too
Yeah.
much.
Oh, but we're covering actually what are we covering? The Lyskor chapters in The Last Light.
The Last
Yeah,
Light.
and The Last Light is the fourth book. Fourth book?
The Last Light is in volume 4, but it is book
It's book
5.
five, right? I always the numbers are never right for me. So it's the fifth it's the
Well, it's only going to get worse from there.
It's the fifth book in the series. Honestly, I have a quibble here that I've been meaning to talk about for a long time. I hate the numbering system that Pirate picked. And I think they didn't even like think about the numbering system, but I really hate.
The volumes thing.
Yes, volumes and the way they set it up as books. The Wandering Inn is a continuing series. It's not really books. When you're on the fifth book, you're on the collection of stories from this part of the series. Like, I don't even know how you would represent that.
So the way that I would most easily like find a comparison would be to look at manga, where you have long-running ongoing stories that are broken up into volumes, and those volumes are just 7 to 9 chapters. They fit it in, sort of comic book style, and that's just a whole thing. But with One Piece specifically, I've always thought of it as being kind of like One Piece, where you have the volumes feel like, sagas to me, and the individual books tend to break down neatly into different arcs of the
Well,
story.
that's the thing. I always thought we should follow the One Piece model and then name each like section or book or whatever as an arc instead of as a fucking book or part one of the arc, whatever.
I mean, okay, I get what you're saying, but I actually really like the names for all of the books. And for Volume 5, when we get to that, that definitely does pretty clearly carry the connected theming of the volume with, Rain's Tears of
Right,
Blood.
and then you get
Or
to
Rain Blood
and
and
then you get to
Tears.
volume 6, for which there was quite a bit of like controversy for the latest book that was released, the Windrunner, because the Windrunner starts off with Ryoka at the beginning of volume 6. Spoilers, spoilers. But w the, it starts off with Ryoka at the beginning of volume 6, and there's only a couple of chapters of her, and then it goes into like a lot of other viewpoints. And it never goes back to Ryoka until even at any other point during the book. So people were pissed. There was accusations of false advertising. And all I could think is, fuck. That's actually maybe a little accurate, unintentional, but
No.
what? It
I hard disagree with this because, okay, the Windrunner is at the start of Volume 6, a relaxed, very sort of slice of lifey. Let's start looking at some different perspectives, give everybody time to catch their breath and start breathing again because the wind is knocked out of everyone at the end of fucking Volume 5. And if you didn't get the wind knocked out of you, you've cried too much and now you gotta catch your fucking breath.
That is true.
It is a it was a sort of loose collection of perspectives, and I think that calling it the Windrunner is specifically really appropriate because Ryoka's been gone for an entire volume and like a half.
That
What else do you call it when you're going to have the triumphant return of everyone's least favorite character?
it's just the other.
And
Go ahead.
this is the arc that made me like Ryoka, so
Well,
I
it
think
only
calling it the Windrunner is
start. Yeah,
appropriate.
that's true. It is, but it only is the start of it, and so much of the volume is focused on the King chapters. And there was some talk of maybe using the King chapters as like the front page. But then I was like, if the King chapters were the front page, if we had to deal with Flos, even Flos doesn't necessarily count because the Chandrar stuff wasn't all about Flos. There was a bunch of other. Okay, we're talking about a book that's far into the
Oh, yeah,
future, but point being.
it is, and we will have to dig into this when we get to that because I think that there are some real questions post Volume 5 that come up about how we break down and sort of consider these books and what Pirates wants to do with them as adaptations from the web novel. But that's neither here nor there. Today, we need to talk about Lescure, and honestly, mostly, in my opinion, Pawn and Ryoka.
Well, Pawn, Ryoka, and Brunker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
Pawn,
there.
Ryoka, Lynette, and Brunker. It starts to expand to
Well, no,
be.
so no, so look at me right. Like Leonette, I'm not saying that they're the only characters in this. Like this is the part of the story where Wondrous Fair becomes a
Oh,
thing,
yeah.
and Eren, has this amazing moment and reaches out with the Fae and has this creates magic in her inn. But outside of that singular moment, I feel like the story of this book across Lyskor is really Pawn's, and then also Ryoka towards the end, when she gets Brunker killed. That bitch.
okay, this is that's so mean. It's
I know. It's not her fault. It's entirely 100%. It's entirely 70% not her fault. But Brunker was like one of my favorite characters, and I guess this is just where we're
well,
starting from the end, I guess, because we keep talking about
yeah.
Brunker.
We need to like take a step back here. First up, you want to do general nerd news and stuff before we even get into it? Because we're very
Oh,
excited.
yeah. There is a ton of really cool nerd news going on, like Patreon falling off the rails.
Okay, let me just do some wandering in news and then we do the nerd stuff.
Yeah,
So
yeah,
the
yeah.
well, first up, the wandering in news is Pirate has a blog now. They are posted a couple times. I don't know how many times they're gonna post. Probably never again. And big news, Pirate did an interview. It wasn't a live interview, but they had Andrea being the voice, but it was pretty damn cool, and I enjoyed watching it, and it was really like cute. They did it like the story time people do in the anime space where they do like animations and stuff. It was cute, right?
Yeah, it was very enjoyable. It's always cool just to kind of hear a little bit more about Pirate, this mysterious figure who lords over us all, and just some of their thought processes and why the firefighter shall never be seen nor heard from again. Fell down a pit.
Shout out to at Matt Book Reviews, who's the Matt's Fantasy Book Reviews, who did the interview. He's great, and I'm hoping Pirate does more stuff with more BookTubers, because, I mean, why not? It gets us to see more of Pirate. And I have my amazing mug! I know this is, I sound like Oprah when I say this, but I have the giant mug that is wandering in merch. It was publicly announced. Patreon got, sorry, not Patreon. Pan spoilers, not pa whatever. Pan level people got access to first run of the mug, and we all bought it. I have mine. I'm so happy. I'm so happy. And all you plebs, it's your fault for not having.
It was just the wrong time of the month, and by the time I really started to take a swing at it, it was gone. But I did happen to get some merch today. I picked up my pan, just got here.
Ooh.
It's got Mersha on the back.
Are you gonna use it or are you gonna display it?
Well, I don't have a stove exactly yet, so right now it's pretty much just for display.
Okay, we are the wrong audience. The fact that we're gonna spend way too much time talking about the mug, and I'm telling you, by the way, the mug is like a beer stein. I filled it up and it's like a full 2 glasses worth of drinking water. And if it wasn't for the fact that I am trying to get one of those giant water bottles that all the people always have that make you constantly drink, the TikTok ones. You've seen those.
No, what?
How have you not? Kylara, tell me you've seen those. Yeah, they're like these giant, massive things. They're huge, and you constantly keep drinking from them. They're built to make it a habit that you're drinking from them. And it's supposed to really help with hydration. And I saw this TikTok of this older, like mid-30s guy that's like me, who's a dad, who like got one of those bottles. His wife gave it to him, and he's like, he says he's pissing all over the place because he's drinking more. Like, I'm doing it. I'm getting it.
I'll have to look it up. I could also use, the needing to drink more water thing. Although, yeah, no, I've uninstalled Facebook and TikTok and, all of my social media apps for my phone. So, yeah, the trends are going to be passing me by. I'm officially old.
Hang on a second. First up, aren't you supposed to be tracking our social media?
Well, we don't have a Facebook page yet, and Twitter set itself on fire, burned to the ground, and nobody's going to want to talk about Twitter anymore. And there's the balkanized new social media space for that is, I don't even know, it's either I have to make 5 or 10 different social media accounts, or we just kind of wait to see who comes out on top and just join that
You know
bandwagon.
the best part about all this? We can just have Calera do it. She's gonna hate us, but yeah. So the happy news, the Tears of Lascaur book, no, was released during our break or time, and the Windrunner was released in September of 2023. I forget when Tears was released. It was earlier in the year.
Yep. And around the time this episode comes out, we're going to have the Titan of Ballaros out, which is going to be
And I
nice.
swear to God, that one is not the cover for that one and the title for that one. There are more chapters of Mears than two.
Yeah. Well, I so If you know what the games are, then it's not a spoiler to talk about them. And if you don't know what the games are, then you should be excited.
Okay, and last.
There
Okay.
are some things in the world that I only wish I could hit myself over the head to reread for the first time a second time.
And I've been told, and I'm being reminded, that Podium does giveaways for every single book launch. And I think the last book launch actually had one of the mug, a couple of the mugs as part of the giveaway for the Windrunner. So I'm not sure what they're going to do for the next book, but it'll probably be something as good. And it is currently one more chapter before Pirate takes their November break. They're taking it early, and there's not going to be any more polls, and they're going to start on the Winter Solstice arc, which will be the end of Volume 9. We're gonna do this. This is gonna be a longer episode, Dragonus. I think it's just gonna have to be.
Well, yeah, no, we've got a lot of catching up to do and talking about. There's some cool stuff that I've been wanting to talk about just in general in the lit RPGs, web serial sphere, which is everybody's getting a fucking web comic now.
I saw that. I want to know how Atheon has mannered to. Sorry, mannered. Atheon Books has
Has
managed
managed.
to get like what, five, six, seven, eight people different to make to get webcomics out of. The biggest one for me personally, the only one that I really cared about on the list, no offense to all the writers and stuff, Superpowered by Drew Hayes is getting a fucking a thing, right?
Superpowered has passed me by. A lot of this stuff is stuff that I don't really know about, but I saw, on Reddit, and it's been shouted out by like the people I do read are all talking about all these other people getting web comics. And honestly, Atheon Books, I don't know where they got it, but I wish I had that much money in my pocket because this is absolutely like a very untapped market with probably a lot of cheap rights that you can get for these adaptations. And I really am, rising tide raises all ships. I'm really hyped for
We
this.
talked about this quite often, that the kind of support system for this kind of like platforming of like isekais and web serials and stuff doesn't exist in the Inner West. And the quote from the CEO of Laurel Pursuit, which is the company that's doing the art, Taro Nakagawa, is basically, this is just the beginning. Our vision together
Yeah.
is to establish the first end-to-end webcomic adaptation pipeline in the West. West is capitalized, by the way, creating hit projects that are fully equipped to scale to their full potential. The rest of it is bullshit, but basically what they're saying is what we've been saying forever, that they need to goddamn do this. And
Yeah.
a best part about all of this, also, we had a friend, actually we both have this, we know them, but Gabe Blue Juice went out to New York City Comic Con, and he attended this panel for all the webcomics people, like the Tapas and webcomic and webtoon stuff, and they were all basically saying, why the hell is no one paying attention to this? Because we're making bank putting these.
Yeah. It's this huge, big potential market. And the thing that makes me most hyped, when a lot of these web serials and web stories over in the East wound up getting adaptations, that wound up sort of feeding back and creating a lot of prestige in those online spheres. And I am hoping that this turns into a wave to get people to start talking about these self-published Royal Road stories like they are real media and not just fan fiction with the delusions of grandeur, right? Because I'm just so tired of that attitude.
I genuinely like, out of all of this, the list, if you're curious about the list, do we want to put this on the description for the episode? We could put the post or something.
We can put in the Reddit link.
Okay, we could put it in the Reddit link. And just there's a whole long list of it, and there's quite a few, and it's a diverse list. There is like a traditional isekai, there's system apocalypse stuff, there's rebirth stuff, there's like there's even the one that the comedic one, Oh Great, I Was Reincarnated as a Farmer, by Benjamin Kurai. I actually have read that one. It was funny. And
Yeah, that one was
like, they
funny.
had Mage
Oh.
Errant, which gets suggested all the time in Progression Fantasy for some reason, because because nobody's read anything except Major. Okay, that was shade. I'm sorry.
Sorry, so what we talking about, oh no, I was reincarnated as a farmer, made me think of Beware of Chicken, which immediately made me think that I can't wait for Beware of Chicken to get like a webcomic.
They have one.
But only, there's a Beware of Chicken webcomic?
There has to be one. Beware of Chicken. Okay, maybe it's something only the Patreons get to know about, because I've been on the Patreon server for a while.
I'm on Patreon. I see a lot of art stuff posted there, but I haven't seen a webcomic that's out. But that's not really what I want, what? Oshi. What I want is Beware of Chicken to get an anime adaptation, but instead of anime, it's the marionette puppets.
Oh my god.
The choreography and just the fucking fight scenes slap in those, and they would be perfect for Beware of Chicken.
To be fair, though, animation has gotten better. I don't know if it's gotten better, but some of the animated studios that are doing the action sequences are very, very good now. I would trust them to be able to pull off Beware of Chicken, that level of action.
Oh. Yeah, if it gets the budget. I'm still crying over here about Netflix deciding it wanted to butcher my fucking child, Record of Ragnarok.
I don't want
to
talk... let's not deep dive into this, but did you see that Pluto came out?
I marathoned it today, and I'm probably going to watch it again with some friends over the weekend.
Oh my god!
I have been waiting for this, Oshi.
It was so good. Like, I only watched one episode because it's just too much for me to binge.
I'm a huge fucking Urasaka... Words. I love that fucking guy. I have read Pluto like 10 times, only because 21st Century Boys is so long that I can only read it once every other year. So I'm not worried about how dense this story is. I'm just worried about the fact there is a limited ability for me to inject it into my eyeballs fast enough.
I know. And just as a thing, there have been a bunch of Kickstarters that have started off this month. The big one that I want to point out is because I think we can do better, the TWI one has to happen sooner rather than later. Dungeon Crawler Carl got a hardcover Kickstarter. They raised 200K. I think there is no fucking way The Wandering Inn doesn't do better than Dungeon Crawler. No offense to Dungeon Crawler Carl, but...
It sounds like it's a little bit of offense towards Dungeon Crawler. Fuck that name is hard to say. Dungeon Crawler Carl, which is also on my list and I should get to. I've just got too much stuff to read.
It's fun.
Watch and do.
It's actually, I think this is as high a praise as you'll get from me. The prose is good. But I'm not sure I love the pattern of the story just because it doesn't speak to me. I mean, the way the plot was progressing. But the actual characterization and the writing is pretty good, honestly. And there's a congratulations on doing so well to the writer of Dungeon Crawler, Carl. It well deserved. Whatever else happens.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes like a story can be good and just not for you. Like the what's the name of that one? It's like Beneath the Moon's Tower Moons.
Beneath the Dragon Eye Moon.
Yes, that one.
That's like that.
It's a very good story, but I just couldn't. It just did not connect with me in any way or shape or
and
form.
And it's not even like the story. I've read it now at this point. It's not like it's a bad story. It just doesn't hit you the same. And that sucks. But, you know, there will be people that will appreciate it and will love it. And I hope it works for them. The other Travis Deverall, Sherloon, he who fights with monsters, is getting a graphic novel update, too. I think that came out in, like, August. Like, excuse me. So they're getting graphic novel stuff out, which is going to be pretty fucking cool. If that goes well, I love when they do like the press releases for this, because they do things like 13 million views online. And the only people who will care about it are the people who are online. even this day and age, I still don't think most people understand how many views 13 million is and what that actually means. Okay. Nerd space. Let's move on to nerd space before.
Nerds.
Thank you for this update and news alert about the web serial space. Thank you for joining us in this update of the web serial space. We need to do like jingles after we do like subsections.
The thing is, the only way I could think of a jingle for this would be if it would be a really aggressively deliberate shitpost.
Oh, no, there has to
just
be a...
like,
this is why we're not clever. All I can do is be mean, and I'll say all the shit news about the shit and stuff. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. Like, we're both trash taste fans, so I think that we just gravitate towards that self-deprecating level of, yeah, we have trash taste humor.
All right, Nerd Space. So you were talking about Patreon?
Oh, yeah. So I have mostly missed what was going on here, but apparently Patreon, most of my Patreons have been turned off since I bought the house, so it's been kind of, like, outside my stuff I've had the brain space for, but they had, like, a big meltdown, something involving, like, completely redesigning it and buying a live stream platform and trying to, like, roll everything in so creators aren't outsourcing to Discord and shit anymore.
So I have a little bit more, I read a little bit more into this just because I still have Patreon and active on a bunch of people. So what they're trying to do, so if anybody out there knows this, I'm going to stop here and say this. So if anybody out here knows this, all web platforms go through the same, like, life cycle. And there is I don't know if it's a theory or a thing. It's called in-shitification. And what happens is after a particular amount of time, coasting on venture capitalist money, which is basically we give you free money and you do what you do. And we're betting that you become as big as Google. And then we make our money back. And at some point they want to make their money back. So the folks at Patreon have to start coughing up ways to make money. And usually they have to make moves that are against the thing that made them successful in the first place. So Patreon as an exchange model, as a like money exchanger for creators to make cash on, is not making them enough money. So in order to make more money, what they're doing is trying to become Discord plus like a YouTube live like a live performance platform, basically turning themselves into like a big platform for like players in the space. Like they're trying to do what YouTube does, they're trying to do what Twitch does. Yeah.
I guess my question is, why is this necessarily a bad thing? I mean, yeah, I just logged on and God, that logo really is fucking hideous.
It is hideous.
But like,
the reason
that is an inevitable fucking lowest common denominator of all corporations.
Yeah.
Logos start out identifiable and eventually become background noise.
The reason that it's a bad thing is because Patreon's initial like social contract with its users was always, we will charge you a certain amount of money to help handle this cash that you're getting from these people, and we will make sure that you always get the most money possible and the least charges possible. What they're trying to do is add things to their platform so that they can increase the charge.
So, okay, I can definitely understand that as a frustrating reality for people to deal with, especially creators who are not, you know, the superstars and are definitely on the bubble even for just being profitable through Patreon. But if it is a question of Patreon not being profitable at all as is, which kind of sounds like what you were saying there, although I don't know these numbers, I mean, it's either change and adapt to try and become profitable or go away.
The thing is, they overpromised and took this money from these venture capitalists. Because the fact was, Patreon could have been profitable at a smaller scale, but they took the venture capitalist money to grow themselves faster than they were at that point.
So they over leveraged, expanded way too quickly, and now the fucking shit's being okay. Yeah.
This is the life cycle of most platforms: is that they have a good idea. It can work in a certain sphere, except that in order to get to that point of profitability, they need a lot of investment. And that investment won't see returns for a long period of time, except they lie or the investors assume that they're going to get their money back a lot faster. So when they start demanding that the money comes back, they companies start making stupid moves that eat into what got them there in the first place. Like, I don't know, a Reddit
Yeah.
CEO telling people to shut the fuck up. Or
Oh yeah, no, I'm familiar with the life cycle here. I guess the Patreon thing, it seems like they're at least trying to like find a way to add value, even if like it's a bad idea and poorly executed or communicated on. It feels like it's way less shitty than like fucking Reddit CEOs screaming at their fucking user base to shut the fuck up.
well, here's the thing. None of what's being added is actually anything any of the users asked for.
Yeah.
And the way their money model is set up, it punishes creators on the lower end of the spectrum, so it becomes harder and harder to use the platform. And they keep their big fishes happy, which is what YouTube used. But anyway, let's not dig too deep into
Yeah.
it.
That we could probably dig entire episode on this, and I just like I said, I've not looked into this too much. I don't know the specific numbers or how this is going on. I'll have to read up on it though. It does sound more interesting.
It's a little more complicated than just like what it seems like on the surface, and it's a lot driven by the policies of, as usual, Tech Bro, who founded the company. And the other big news, the big thing that's been happening in the background, is the auto workers of the country and a bunch of different labor unions, including the Writers Guild and SAG-AFTRA, the Actors Guild, have all gone on strike. It's been labor summer, right? And
Yeah. Well,
being a pseudo leftist, I'm not an actual leftist, I'm close, but not no cigar, I have been in like super excited. Labor is having a comeback this summer.
yeah. Oh, no, like you know me, I'm all about unions. I don't always think they're right, but I think they are a fundamentally important part of the process. I'll admit, I was definitely right about what happened with the Writers Guild
Oh
strike.
yeah,
They have kicked. Not much was done to actually solve the underlying problem of many rooms not having enough jobs. They've kicked the can down the road a few
what are
years.
you talking about?
They increased the minimums,
There was
and
no
they
minimums.
get. Well, okay, no. There has always been, with the Writers Guild, minimum amounts that you would get paid when you go to do like writers' room
No, but
stuff.
they never had minimums of people that had there was no official requirement for like TV shows to have a room of writers. Now there is. What they were going for, as far as I could understand it, wasn't to raise the money. It was to have the jobs be there in the first place.
Yeah, you see that. Okay, maybe I misread this,
Okay.
but I read that they had increased the minimums for payment, not added mandatory
They
minimum
did both.
writer presence.
They did both. They increased the minimums. They created a, like, they didn't get 100%, but they got 90% of what they wanted, and they made like rules so that now that there have to be a certain number of writers, and that the writers have to have be on production set, so you can't just fire them once the production starts, so that they actually learn things. Basically, they tried to codify all the base essentials of being a Hollywood writer so that people can gain experience and become showrunners and do stuff, instead of it just being you get hired on, you write a script, and then that's it. Because oftentimes that is the worst way to make content in the first place. That's how I understand. Sorry, I read a lot about this because I watched Hassan Piker and Adam, what's his face, talk about it and go through all of the wins and losses and why they did it.
Yeah, I had read that they had kept on like the thing for helping get people trained as producers, like the fucking studios are all contributing a whole bunch to like the production training thing, which was already a thing beforehand. I don't know if they upped the amount or just guaranteed to make sure they had to keep doing it. To me, the big win was they finally have forced streaming companies to open up their books and actually show people what the fuck is going on, which was just the minimum thing that had to be done to get residuals done. And streaming companies hate showing people how badly they're doing.
Like there's just too much stuff, and but it's good news. SAG-AFTRA is almost done. The there are other union strikes going on. I heard good news from the UAW strike. I'm hoping that I know Republican-controlled states, no, this is reality, don't have very good labor laws, but there is hope that these labor successes will encourage more people to join unions and to like work together to like stop the slide in like cost of living increases and payrolls and all the bullshit that's been happening to workers in the United States for the last 50 years as they were told over and over again that they don't need this anymore. Assholes. Anyway, I am not gonna get any more political than that. I'm just happy.
Yeah, it just ultimately it was like not a very long deal as these things go. It really felt like they were just kicking the can down the road, mostly because I think everyone wants to see if AI actually pans out before they burn the entire industry down on either end to try and do something about it.
I didn't. I actually don't think that's exactly the case. They've always kept the length of the contracts to within 3 to 5 years, just because they can't. Studios and everybody just tends to like do whatever they can to come up with ways to go around the contracts. So it makes sense for them to keep them reasonably short, so they can renegotiate and stop like bullshit going through. You know they're gonna do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everybody's always looking for a way to try and work their contract. I just think that we'll probably see another writer's strike way sooner than the delay we have between the last one and this one.
I don't know. 3 years is reasonable. They should be able to figure stuff out. Okay, let's move forward. Let's talk about the Wandering Inn. Let's talk about The Last Light and all of the chapters that deal with L'Escor in the fifth book of the Wandering Inn. Where the hell do we start? Kylera, any suggestions?
Honestly, I think that the best place to start here might just be to talk about Aaron and the fairy dinner.
Okay, you. That
Did
happens.
it?
Wait, yes, I knew that wasn't in this book. Kylera just told, for those who can't hear, she just told us that that starts in an earlier book, and she's right.
This is the doom and hell of trying to fucking do this podcast. Even with pages and pages of notes, I forget what happened in what book.
I knew. We did talk about it. Right, she's making. Wondrous Fair, the
Yeah.
shitty version because she's not good at it yet, of making
I'm
food.
sorry, not good at it yet. I'm still not convinced she's good at it. But
Ooh.
that's spoilers, so we'll talk about that another
Hey,
time.
look, I'm giving. Okay, there's a difference between.
Mostly, I think her names suck. Defense suit.
Oh my God, look, let's. Here's the only time I will defend Aaron when it comes to food. You cannot blame someone who can't even boil an egg properly without a skill for being shitty at food. So that's all I'm gonna say. So there, yeah.
Anyways.
Anyways, some.
Aaron's kind of in the background of this book. It's feels like it's a lot about, the dungeon, the adventurers. She's making stuff for people. This book to me, like I said at the start, Pawn and Ryoka. Pawn's character growth and sort of learning to realize to understand just how deep the divide between him and the leadership of the Hive are, and Ryoka completing this sort of journey, getting back into town, and getting a whole bunch of people killed.
Before we like dig in too deep, at the start of the notes, Kylara put down, she copied over some random Paba notes. Did you know Paba was like they were trying to get book one published back in like 4.10, which is I want to say like 6 years ago. Wait, no, how many years ago was that? A long time ago.
Yeah, I started reading right like one, maybe two chapters into volume six. So all that was kind of before my time. So yeah, I remember reading through Paba notes and seeing that like they had wanted to get it published at some point. It's been a long journey.
And they're apparently okay. So one of the Papa notes from 4.0 AT is, did you know I'm a huge fan of Good Mythical Morning, the YouTube channel? I especially love Rhett and Link's podcast, Ear Biscuits. Never heard of it. I'd recommend you listen to it, not going to, because you never listen to mine. Although I know it's not for everyone. Still, I would love to be on that podcast someday. Those are the kind of dreams I have, as I imagine everyone has, to meet people they like. That got me thinking, if I were on a podcast, naturally my identity would be revealed since I'd have to introduce myself. I don't think I'd just call one, just... I'd want to just call myself Pirate Abba the entire time. Am I being interviewed in person? I might as well talk about my history in concrete detail. So in what circumstances would I say, I'm totally willing to tell the world my identity of my own volition just to be on this show thing? My conclusion was if it got me on Ear Biscuits or if I got on a late night show with Stephen Colbert. I mean, that could happen still. I would have held out for Jon Stewart, but I hear he's retired. Maybe I've missed some other worthy events. But I don't know. I'm Loopy. I hope you like the Torrent chapter. Thanks for it. Listen, Pirate. I'm going to speak directly to you. There is a thing in this world. It is called VTubers. You can create...
Well, okay.
What?
I don't know. Go on. I'll point out why VTubers don't quite work here. Look, after you're done explaining.
You can create a virtual model of yourself. You can be interviewed as that virtual model. You can use text to speech. There are virtual VTubers who do not ever use their real voice, and they are run by whole things. Hatsune Miku, like, I think, has had multiple people behind it. It's an entire personality. You do not have to be.
Oh no. Hatsune Miku is like a whole different thing separate from VTubers. That's Vocaloid. That's like an entirely different universe.
Okay.
Mainly because Vocaloid has like decades of really aggressive, high quality, in Japanese really only, language stuff for like the fake singing and all. Or real singing, but like the fake AI singing. The technology is just really not there. For, I think, Paba specifically to avoid their voice. Everything else can be covered.
But they can find a way to... I believe in them. They can find a way to master their voice. Point I'm saying is, if Hatsune Miku can come to the United States and have a full-on tour with, like, full, like, fucking, what does they call it? Pop-ups all over the place with lots of fans showing up, you can get a VTuber bottle and be popular. There are lots of weirdos just like us or me out there who would not be object to this. I'm just saying. Okay, sorry. I wanted to put that out there. So, Brunker?
Brunker. Everyone's favorite Cinderay Knoll.
So, in Lascaur, during this book, one of the big plot lines happens to be the Antinium... specifically Pawn and his interactions with Leonette and the newfound Zern's arrival alerting the free queen to the fact that the other queens have failed to create new hives. And there's like you get more information about what the Antinium are actually here for from Zern. I think that's the best like lore dump out of this. Pawn's evolution across this, I loved it, because you see him reach out to other Antinium in the Hive, and his first thing is, how do I find a way for people who are incapable of writing, incapable of doing so many things, a way to, like, deal with the inability to create an identity for themselves. He finds the paint thing via Mercia. And now he has to deal with the other side of it, which is now they have a way to express it, but their expressions also contain the fact that, oh, I don't know, thousands of them die every day with having lived like minutes or hours or days.
Days, if they're lucky.
Yeah.
Or unlucky, depending on your perspective. With Pawn, And this interaction here, this growing unease with the nature of their life and the way that they're just sent to be slaughtered. And then the realization that when he finally manages to win a degree of reprieve for his Antinium he's taken under his wing, it just means the Antinium he hasn't been able to help yet just suffer in their place. And he cannot, for the life of him, convince the queen or Kilbekich to understand that they are already all individuals.
Is that what he was trying to do? I thought.
I don't think that's what he's trying to do because I don't think he himself really grasps or understands this in a way that he can elucidate. But as we've talked about before, and I continue to maintain, every Antinium is an individual. They simply have no context to even understand that fact.
That's our.
And when they are granted that context, it's often in a level of stress that causes them to snap, let out all of this repressed pain that they live under, and then fucking start talking about how down with the queen. Who needs the monarchy? Somebody get Karen over here.
That's a reasonable conclusion to make, and I didn't see it as that. I was very much like invested in Pan's point of view, so I was trying to understand him from like I don't know how to say this, but from a religious point of view.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and for me, Pan's whole thing was everything is precious. Life is precious. He was trying to understand that there has to be
Yeah.
meaning to life, otherwise it what worth is it? And if your existence is predetermined and your death is predetermined, then how do you give meaning to life? I think the quote is, "What can I give a soldier who will die in moments, if not faith? Tell me, Ryoka Griffin, why is faith meaningless to the Antinium?" Ryoka tries to convince him to like not do the god thing because she knows
Yeah.
about the bad stuff.
Ryoka is. This might be a bit mean of me, but the way she approached Pawn in that, trying to convince him that just not to do anything related to religion at all, she sounds to me like she would be a bit of a Reddit
Oh
atheist.
yeah, definitely like copy paste Reddit atheist stuff, but also like there is a condescension to the way she deals with Pawn as if Pawn's expression of his emotions and the way he's dealing with things is some kind of button that she can press and turn off, and she's like, "Oh look, it's dangerous. You gotta stop." And
Yeah.
that's not how faith works. And I'm not,
It's not how faith works. It's not how people work. But that level of just sort of basic condescension towards everyone and everything in the setting, because she comes from a modern world that knows a bit better, is pretty typical of her here.
yeah, and that's fair. And I don't think it was badly written or anything. I actually think it was a really great conversation because it leads to that question that Pawn asks Ryoka, and then later as Ryoka tries to, like, as a mea culpa, says that if you're gonna learn about God, let's learn about all the gods. So she like info dumps all of the various religions and philosophies and tries to give him as good a sense of like the best of our interpretations of the universe and of the way we believe in things not seen,
Yeah.
kind of deal.
To help, use this great knowledge she has in a constructive way, revealing a lot more than she usually ever does to anyone anywhere. Because she's usually, very tight-lipped. It's all too dangerous. I can't tell anyone anything about this. But what Pawn said really broke through with her. I love the scene. I love that line from Pawn. It is absolutely beautiful. And I love that Ryoka has this moment of growth and says, okay, yeah, but let me at least help explain
What?
better than Aaron.
Yeah, better than Aaron, but also I think she does when she like leaves aside her preconceptions. I think this is something I always believe. I'm a theist. I know I'm not, that's not always popular amongst all the people I'm around, but I am a theist. I'm not necessarily attached to a particular religious order, but I do believe that there is something divine in the universe. And you can. It is just me. Maybe the divinity is in ourselves and our perceptions of the universe. I don't know. I'm not getting into that, but point being,
Yeah.
I understand where Pon was coming from. You need something to believe in, whether that is rationalism, whether that is a divine creature up in the sky, a flying spaghetti monster, whatever it is, you need that aspect of belief in order for you to make the impossible possible. And Pon reaches for that and it's like, how do I make it possible for others while also holding to the thing that makes me myself? Because he's not just struggling with faith, he's also struggling with how does my faith, my beliefs, allow me to participate in something that's so bloody and self-destructive, like the battle, the thing that leads all these Antinium to death. It's the pacifist versus not so pacifist. No.
I don't even see it specifically being pacifist. It is this never-ending grind to defend the hives. People are created and people die in a very fast, very rapid turnaround time. There is no meaning to their life, thus there's no meaning to their struggle or sacrifice. This is an objectively abhorrent life they are all being subjected to, and as much as he does what he can for the people around him, Pawn is the kind of big-hearted person who it's probably never enough, and will. When he looks at all of these people he can't give meaning to and help and save, it hurts. But it also makes him question the validity of everything he's doing. I think there's a world where Pawn, with slightly less support or the wrong support or just, taking a left instead of a right in the hive on the way to a conversation with Kilbukich, snaps and tries to stab that fucker. There is the potential for really deep anger at his situation Pawn has here, and there's a lot of struggle for faith. Is he doing harm by standing by? What can he do to do more? There is a lot of deep questions here, and this is really just scratching the surface of his arc in this direction. And to sort of crisscross over and take a left turn at the Ryoka Pon conversation, I like a lot of what happened with Ryoka when Ryoka gets back to Liscor. It feels like Paba wrote her as a character who had stuff that needed to get done in a hurry. There's a lot of conversations, a lot of weirdness with her and Zern.
And she delivers the horns, the things she got for trading away the stuff for the horns, which is really great because the horns are now like actually have magical stuff and they feel more like an adventuring team, you know?
Yeah. And it all fits really nicely into their group. And I love how they sort of band together and all agree as a group that whatever Ryoka did with whatever Ryoka couldn't bring back to them, they've known adventuring parties who have died over shit like that. Just trust her at her word.
The fact that Eren's back at the at Lascaux, and this is after she's been around
Been Selim
Selim,
for a
and now she
while.
has the door that connects Selim to her inn, which creates this whole new dynamic where she's like multi-city inn right now. And I love the storyline where the other innkeepers try to tell her what her business is after she tries to hire some new staff. By the way, she sucks
I
it.
mean,
This is the first time. Not the first time that you see Erin be horrible at people management when it comes to her own business.
yeah, she went to try and poach some people, and ultimately, I think her failure was, for all that Eren is brilliant, Eren's preconceived ideas about people do not shake easily. And she basically had to have Zell metaphorically slap the knowledge that Lynette has changed. Not Lynette. Fucking.
Oh no, you should tell Lynette she's changed. Leonette.
Leonette has changed and grown and should be listened to when she says, these people are kind of making trouble.
I.
And also, that bumps into her preconceived notions that these are good people because she's met them briefly under ideal circumstances.
It's also like our official intro to Ishgar and Drossi, because Ishgar gets hired after to be part of the inn staff, and he's the waiter, and he becomes the inn's like waiter. And Drossi, the gossip that's been sort of flitting around on the outside, now becomes part of the inn as like a, I think she serves drinks and is like a bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, can you imagine a more perfect class combination than gossip bartender?
I know! It's like she was made for the, yes, I know she was made for the...
it's like such a beautiful, like, you want to sit down and talk to somebody that you can tell your troubles to, and who better than the gossip who knows somebody who's having a worse day than you?
The problem is she's kind of a shitty bartender, but who knows? but then Aaron doesn't exactly serve, like, complex beers. She's probably just serving stuff. But for Aaron, that's mostly Aaron's, like, storyline in this book, is that she comes back, she deals with her staffing issue, she recognizes the changes that have happened in both Mercia and Leonette, and puts Leonette in charge of the inn because she's not stupid enough to try to be in charge of something she's bad at. And she cooks and just invites people there. And I love that. And the way it like intersects a lot more with the Horns getting their stuff back, Ryoka coming back, Zell finally like getting to a point where he respects Aaron and spending time there. And what else was there?
Ryoka bringing trouble.
Oh, and the penicillin. So, wait. Wasn't there a penicillin?
Oh, yeah. The penicillin's being introduced as an idea. I think it's still a way off,
though. No, I could have sworn that it was introduced earlier and that Octavia finally figures out the penicillin mold. Or was it honey mold? I don't know.
Wait. I don't think that that's it yet, because that doesn't happen until after Leonette upgrades her class.
Oh, so they take... Oh, okay, so for those who didn't again hear, they're testing out a precursor to the penicillin, which actually does work. And Brunker is able to recover from it, right?
Yeah, and Brunker has such a great character arc here, starting out as, you know, clearly an enemy, clearly caught up in whatever bullshit his people have with Mercia and White Knolls, just being defensive in general. And then he's got this great sort of growing closer to everyone. He's healed. He really kind of just has this... just after talking about pawn and religion stuff, I was about to say he has this big come-to-Jesus moment about what an asshole he's been. it feels weirdly inappropriate.
And then
since all the gods are dead.
And it's not even that. I think the best part of all of it is the fact that he sort of reveals his dream. And this becomes such a common thing at the inn. It actually does, is that people, when they come to the inn, like, tell someone at the inn that what their dream is, and Brunker's dream is to be a knight, but he was rejected. And often enough, just telling someone at the inn leads through some confluence of events.
It's a magical place for a magical innkeeper where dreams can truly come true. If you're willing to open up. And even if they can't do it for you, the inn becomes a place where people are willing to help you try. And in his case, it happens almost immediately because there is royalty conveniently on hand. That said, probably my favorite Brunker moment outside of that is when he gets asked if he's important to Aaron and what he means to her, and he's just like, I don't know what I mean to Aaron, but I hope it's something important because she has really grown to mean a lot to me. Mm-hmm. And he's clearly caught some feelings for her, and about one sentence later gets brutally fucking murdered.
Yeah, that was not like the end sequence of that, in which Brunker is murdered, Ryoka flees the south, leaving behind Mercia and everybody, and the fact that Aaron, at her last moment, of course, forgives her because she was just angry, but, you know, Ryoka's not listening and she like runs away. That was just, like, gut punch.
And it's just so, like, oh, God, there's a lot going on with it. And I'm trying to find, like, the right way to try and phrase what I'm trying to say here. It is a absolutely amazing like choreography sequence of events. I love the way that Aaron makes use of Wondrous Fair in what feels like the most useful and genuinely wondrous way of the whole fucking book since she's gotten it, to create this like what would an undead eat bone meal blood steak that the fucking skeleton actually likes. That uses that to catch her out, and then we see the fucking gold rank team, really competent, ass kickers, Urien dies, like all of these moments of tragedy in this book turn into defeat. Brunker gets knight, his life is snatched away from him in his moment of greatest happiness. Aaron gets won over on this incredibly powerful, dangerous enemy, proceeds to bull rush through everyone and kick their teeth in. Ryoka flees, makes her way out to Terriark, finally gets to explain what's going on and get a powerful ally who can chase these people off her back, and it costs her her best and in some ways only really true friend.
And her heart explodes.
Yeah, but that got fixed like immediately
Yeah,
after.
but her heart exploded. It was cool.
Oh, yeah.
It was cool. And Terriark is now like a depressed old man again about the fact that he might have, fucked up by sending a mortal to a sociopath who might possibly kill that mortal. Oh, that's
Terry has been known to lose track of things sometimes.
Go ahead. You're good.
And I mean, Ryoka does other stuff this book, where she's, learning magic and then learning that magic might not entirely super be for her. And then she learns the real magic, the true magic, the wonder, the fey, the wind. We talked about it. The next book is named Windrunner. This is certainly an important theme, even if she really fucking struggles with it here. Like, do the windy thing, do the windy thing. What the fuck is the windy thing?
Aside from that, Ryoka does do some fairly positive things. She visits Garya's farm and teaches her the basics of martial arts and helps her figure out her next steps as like she gains a martial artist class. We find out later because of this. And
Yeah.
Ryoka actually gets her friend, her magical Ivaleth friend, to say, "I will teach you how to see the wind," and she does for a moment, at least. We think. We think,
Yeah.
yeah.
And there is a lot to be said about Ryoka's character arc really taking an upward swing here. She is being a bit more free with her knowledge. She's trusting people more, getting them to open up to her and opening up back. This talk with Pawn, the talk with Garya, this sort of back and forth with Ivaleth and learning the wind. And it's really cruel the way that all of that just gets taken from her when she is absolutely just crushed by this task she was given by Terriark, and the fact that Peril Chandler is kind of a fucking asshole.
There's also Erin actually making the right decision when she almost accidentally creates like a new being, the healing slime, and letting it go and just telling people the experiment never worked instead of, creating a world of
Maybe.
monsters.
I am not convinced that just dumping the slime out the window and telling it, "Be free, my child," was the correct move here for that slime.
Probably not, but you know what? At least it's better than, I don't know, having to cut it off and kill it after you've basically tortured it for like
I mean,
months.
we've eventually we are going to find out more about slimes. There's a whole town of them. They're adorable. I think that Aaron had other options, but she really just went for the one that let her wash her hands of this abomination she has created the fastest.
Yeah, we used to be so careful with spoilers. We really need to be more careful.
So I have like different classifications of spoiler in my mind, right? There's plot stuff, there is the revelations, the things that would give context that can really ruin a story to know it ahead of time. And then there's what I call the funny lore snippets. Like, yeah, somewhere out there, there's actually a town that, like, everybody's got Slime Rancher as a class, and they have pet slimes, and you have slimes of the season, and there's some stuff to that. And
We
I
won't
th
say the name of the town.
No, but
No.
like just th this world is expansive and a cool nifty thing exists. Like I can understand if maybe that's a spoiler that somebody would find off-putting, but
Let's jump off this topic. I really want to talk about Torin before we wrap up. So Torin comes back here, and we find out that Torin is alive in Liscor's dungeon, and that the Liscor's dungeon is sustaining Torin's existence. And here is where things get a little weird. Torin dresses himself up, and in the process, Torin sort of gets a split personality or a new personality, and that personality Torin thinks of himself as herself. And there is an interesting discussion to be had about how Torin doesn't actually have a gender and can choose which gender to be, which is pretty cool, but it also like it is which personality is the real Torin? Is it her? Is it him? I don't even
I mean,
remember. Does Torina get a name?
you know what? I don't remember either.
I don't remember.
Ultimately, it's deeply complicated, and my mind keeps going to a large number of different anime tropes. Like I immediately thought of fucking Gundam 00 off the top of my head, where you have these characters with sort of splintered personalities, and ultimately the quote unquote real one is the two of them when they have accepted and joined together as a complete person, as opposed to the separate parts of themselves that they have sectioned off. I feel like that might be a thing with Torin,
That's part of
because
it, but there's also. Go ahead, sorry.
the female personality feels like where a lot of the emotions that Torin hasn't learned to revel in his worst self have gone to express themselves.
The thing that that's noted by both Kylera, and I'm gonna note too, is this line: they thought she was human. They thought she was alive. They thought she was someone who would help them, be their friend. And Torin had been, just like Eren. Just like Eren. How about that? Torin had done it. For a few seconds, she'd been just like Eren. The skeleton walked back into the darkness, that tantalizing thought in her head. Look, that alone tells you that this is very, like, you know what it reminded me of? I watched this, what's the name of the film with the guy who's got his mother in the back and he murders people? I forget. Bates Motel.
Psycho?
Norman, something.
Psycho?
Yes, Psycho. What is it, Psycho?
Yes.
I'm thinking of the TV series Bates Motel, but yeah, and the not that I'm.
The one that's based on the movie Psycho?
Yes, stop it. You're being busy. Okay, what I'm trying to say is, it's like Torin can't process things a different way, and I wonder if there is an attempt here to. Like, I got thrown away. Eren threw me away. How dare she? But there's also some part of Torin that's going like, I got thrown away because I was a monster. I can't be a monster. But what if I was like Eren? What if she would take me back if I was like Eren? Is Eren dead? Was I not there to protect her?
Torin at this point thinks Eren is dead.
Yeah.
Torin thinks that they killed Eren. I think that this is, Torin looking at their mother figure and trying to emulate her and express and understand. And the only way to really do that is to almost create a new person to do so, because, Torin did kind of kill her. Kind of like actually
Yeah.
Psycho, yeah.
One of the comments from the Torn chapters that's been noted, it's startlingly, okay, I'm gonna try that again. It's startling how easily Torin is taking to learning and practice as a means to success on top of his quote unquote skills in common. But he seems to have science fiction-like abilities in this regard. Indeed, he's very much equivalent to a classic science fiction self-aware robot slash android without the pesky three laws or other predefined morals. This is from The Outrider. And yeah. This is like Pirate does great with like non-standard, non-humans, or like artificial like constructs. I love that.
Yeah, the Antinium and Torin both really dig into these classic ideas of sci-fi and personhood and what it means to be a person. And God, I gotta go watch the last episode of Pluto after this.
Okay. Bringing it back
and
to Pluto.
It's a talent of pirates to really capture these perspectives and capture it in a way where you can really feel what it is to struggle with the question. In a way that a lot of authors just, it's really self-apparent that, yeah, you're asking if you're a person or not. You're a person, whatever, move on.
Yeah.
Pirate takes it very much to the next level here.
I did forget to mention one thing. During the attack by Rugrika and, what is the other person name? No, what is the actual name of them? They're as fresh as babies. Venitra and Idrani.
Yeah.
We do have something horrible happen. Other than Bronkhorst, there's a second death that's
Ulurin dies. Yeah.
Yeah, Ulurin dies. And Ulurin was
a big, strong, powerful, you know, big hitter that was brought in specifically because, I mean, he's an experienced, capable, high-level warrior with powerful magical artifacts. Eren called in the biggest fucking thing she could find to be a hammer, and then he just broke.
And for the Griffin hunt, it was bad. Like, that was bad. Yeah, that was devastating. You can't give it up. Like, anything to do with Eren off, like, sometimes it's amazing and wonderful and beautiful, and sometimes you die and it's depressing and sad and it will break you. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Welcome back to our attempt to get our asses through this. I will note that we've made a commitment to not just finishing all of the books and stuff and catching up and reviewing the old stuff, but we're also going to take some episodes to talk about current chapters, every couple of like release chapters or things or whatever, I think is a good idea, like 3 or 4 chapters. We can chat about stuff. Like, I really want our next episode to be about the most recently released pre-Solstice chapters, especially like the Grand Design one.
Yes.
We gotta chat about that stuff. For those who don't know what the Grand Design is, you'll find out. Thanks everybody for listening. Say goodbye, Gragnus.
Goodbye, dragons.
You've been listening to No Killing Goblins. The music on No Killing Goblins was composed by System Glitch. They can be found at youtube.com/systemglitch. You can get in touch with us via our Twitter at No Killing Goblin or email us at nokillinggoblins with an S at gmail.com.